Hello, and welcome to the sixth episode of Season 7 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
This week's a critical episode in our podcast journey, Graham.
It's that important.
Words are strange, aren't they? One word, more than one meaning.
I think you need to explain, Ray.
The word critic and those words formed from it has over the years come to mean quite different things.
Mostly negative, I fear.
Well, not necessarily, Graham. What about mission critical?
Okay, well, I guess I take that to mean it's very important.
And a critical evaluation of the music of Bach?
Well, technically, I suppose that means a scholarly or informed review.
Exactly. But there are also negative connotations. The reactor's about to go critical.
Yeah, that's definitely not a good thing, right?
And what about she was very critical of my behaviour?
That's more what I was thinking about, if I'm honest.
Absolutely. But all of these words stem from a Greek word, kritikos, spelled with K's instead of C's, meaning, as a verb, the action of discerning or evaluating. And when used as a noun, it's a person who is able to offer valuable analysis, judgments, or interpretations.
I'm not sure that's how the word is generally interpreted these days, Ray, but let's...
Well, everyone's a critic, aren't they?
Indeed. I bet that's not the last time we go down that road, but let's get to the point. I'm sure you had a point when you introduced the subject.
Well, yeah, I did. Critical thinking. It's such an important part of what we do. And I can't help musing that maybe firms would be well placed to deliver courses in it as part of their overall training programs for people who work in aspects like due diligence, transaction monitoring, and a whole range of control environments and interactions, which are so critical to the success of our risk management.
I see what you did there, Ray. I'm not sure it was entirely successful.
Well, I think you're being overcritical, to be fair.
Okay, enough with the puns. Shall we get to the meat of the episode then?
Well, I think you might be right. Yeah, let's do that. I thought we could do an episode talking about critical thinking and include a few examples gleaned from the Dark Money Files archives of situations where it can make all the difference.
Now, I think that is a great idea. And I know we've got examples both from the realms of KYC and investigations. But I think maybe we should start with the definition of what we mean by critical thinking.
Yeah, although, oddly, it's not easy to find consistent agreement on exactly what that definition is. But I think I can say with some confidence that they all boil down to one basic concept, which is thought directed towards a particular goal.
Okay. Have you got an example of that?
So suppose you've just travelled into the centre of London by bus, and looking at the clock in the bus station, you see it's already 1400 hours. It's 2 o'clock, Graham. It's taken a bit longer than you thought. You've got to be home for a 15:30, a 3:30 appointment. You need to pick up your watch, which has just been repaired.
Is that why you were looking at the clock in the bus station, Ray?
Ah, critical thinking, you see. That's exactly right. But there's more. You know it's going to take 15 minutes to get to the repairers and retrieve your watch. So you calculate how long it will take you to get from there back home and realise that if you replicate your inward journey time, it would take too long.
Oh, dear. What to do?
Well, you've got a couple of alternatives. One is to walk to the station and get the train home, and the other is to use an Uber. Okay. Other services are available.
Of course. Bolt, I believe, is a choice du jour. But you'd still need to work out the time to walk to the station and when your train leaves in order to understand whether there's a suitable train to get you home on time.
And if the station's further from your home than the bus stop, how much additional walking time at the other end? The Uber option is currently showing as a faster journey time, but you need to calculate how long it will take to arrive. And then there's the potential for sudden traffic jams delaying your journey.
But it will be able to drop you outside your front door at the other end.
Exactly. So all in all, there's lots to think about.
It's odd, isn't it, how much of that you do almost subconsciously without realising just how much cognitive effort is involved.
Yes, and in the end, you might have to make a judgement about what your best route is. Maybe the walking time to the station means you arrive at a time that's very close to the departure of the only train that will get you home in time. But you also know that traffic tends to build up on the route home because the schools start coming out during your journey.
Okay, and therefore you might reason you can always walk a bit quicker, but the train is less likely to be held up on the way home.
As long as it's on time departing. But you can always check that on the app on your phone.
Blimey. I mean, that is a great example, Ray. There are so many elements to think about in order to come to a proper judgment.
Yeah, by starting with a very clear understanding of where it is you want to end up.
Yeah.
But then again, there's always the get back on the bus and hope for the best approach.
That would be the route adopted by the people who are always late for appointments, wouldn't it, Ray?
Yeah, I know one or two of those, don't we?
I think we do. And if there's one thing that links us is that we both hate being late for anything.
Exactly. Although I'm trying to be more relaxed about other people being late. So let's think about how this might be applied in a KYC setting.
Of course. So where do you want to start?
Well, where does it always start? Identification and verification, Graham.
Well, not much to go wrong there, surely.
Well, what about the situation where the prospective customer has provided a driver's license and a utility bill, say for electricity, as address evidence?
Well, that's just nice and straightforward, isn't it?
Well, yeah, except the address on the driver's license is different from the one on the utility bill. And for a part of the world that you don't know well, but you thought was a mainly commercial area.
Okay, so even though the driver's license wasn't provided as address evidence, the utility bill was, you can't just ignore it. So what do you do?
Well, one simple thing to do would be to put the address in Google, other search engines are available, and do a Street View search.
Excellent.
And it then becomes apparent that the address is actually an office building used for virtual companies.
Now, that is a problem because your driver's license has to be registered to an address where the DVLA can contact you at any time. So a virtual office is unlikely to meet those requirements.
Well, exactly. Of course, it might just have been an administrative error, as that may be an address you use to receive your business mail and you put it in error.
Okay, so it's a red flag, but it's not necessarily suspicious.
Exactly. Turning to the utility bill. The address matches that given by the prospective customer as their main residential address.
Well, that's good.
And that's where most people might leave it. Except that's never been your habit, has it, Graham?
No.
And you notice that the bill, which is for the supply of electricity, is for the quarter between last November and February. And in a part of the country that had quite a cold winter.
Well, that could be anywhere in the UK, Ray, but what's the point here?
Well, the point is that the bill's for £28.
What, for the entire 3 months?
For the entire three locked-down stay-at-home months, yes, Graham.
Blimey, I mean, my electricity is more than that for a week, and I've got solar panels, Ray.
Is that a bit high?
Well, not really, because we are all electric, so there is no gas in our house at all. So that does represent our entire energy costs.
Well, okay, fair enough then. But what about someone getting through a cold winter of lockdown, spending just £28 on electricity?
All right. Well, let's apply some critical thinking then, shall we, Ray? They may have a huge solar panel array.
Have you ever been to England in the winter, Graham? I don't think that's going to be much help in our part of the world at that time. But looking at the recent satellite view of the house, thanks, Internet, I love you, it's clear there isn't a solar panel inside. And it's equally clear that it's actually a very big house.
Is there any sign maybe of a wind turbine in the garden? Right.
No obvious signs of a wind turbine in the garden, Graham. I did spot a swimming pool, though.
Oh, lovely. But obviously it's not a heated pool, then.
Well, I don't have an infrared view, but apparently it's not heated. But certainly there's no wind turbine.
All right. So we might reasonably assume that this person does not spend the winter in their main residence.
Well, I think that's right. And that's quite an interesting conclusion, isn't it? I mean, once again, while it's a red flag, it's not necessarily suspicious. They might have a winter home in Spain, or maybe they were caught visiting family in Australia when the lockdown hit and decided to stay there for the time being. I mean, we can think of all sorts of explanations, but the questions need to be asked just in case there are grounds for some suspicion.
Exactly. And our listeners won't be surprised to hear that there have been times when we've spotted small clues like that, which have led to some very serious outcomes.
Well, indeed.
OK, so that's an example of critical thinking during the KYC process. Shall we turn to critical thinking in an investigation?
Now, I reckon you're going to have a few examples of these, Graham.
Well, Ray, I do.
Any company's house ones?
Ray, you know me too well.
Well, after 25 years, I should think so.
25 years. God, you know, that could be an episode, you know, a look back over the last 25 years.
It could. Should we stay focused for now, though?
Sorry, you're right. It's so easy. All right, so let's say you've been asked to look at a new incorporation and it's a limited partnership.
A Scottish one?
How did you guess?
Well, they do come up now and again.
they do, but this time for a slightly different reason. All limited partnerships are currently required to file on paper, as there is no ability to create or maintain a limited partnership in the UK through electronic filing.
Now, I wonder how many people know that, Graham.
I'm going to guess that not many, Ray, but it does provide some really interesting clues. So I'm going to base this example on real life, but there is no suggestion here of wrongdoing, so I'm not going to include any names.
Fair enough. Although I'm anticipating that this won't necessarily exemplify an entirely innocent profile.
Well, should we leave that for our listeners to decide?
That's fair. They can apply some critical thinking of their own.
Exactly.
So what's the basics of this one then?
Well, you've been asked to look at this newly formed Scottish Limited Partnership because it's got some unusual features.
Which are?
Well, the declared person with significant control, effectively the owner, is Mexican and they live in Mexico.
Okay. First question. What was it that first interested them in the concept of a Scottish limited partnership?
That's a really good critical thinking question, Ray. Yes.
So who are the partners?
Well, as you know, you need two, a general and a limited partner. And the general partner is the same person who's been named as PSC. And the limited partner is another person who has four very Spanish sounding names.
So they're Mexican as well?
Well, Ray, unfortunately, the only information you're required to give in relation to the partners for a Scottish Limited Partnership is the name. No age, no address, no nationality, nothing.
So that's not very helpful for us, is it?
No, but they do share one of their names with the PSC, and I think it is likely that they are husband and wife.
Not much to go on, though, Graham. Where do we go next?
Well, you know, right, Scottish Limited Partnerships are a bit like buses. So you wait a while and then they often come along in groups. So my bit of critical thinking would be to look and see what other SLPs were registered at the same time.
And?
Well, we quickly established that there were three other SLPs registered to the same address and on the same day and with consecutive registration numbers.
I wonder if they are by any chance connected. Worth a look then. And what do we find?
Well, the other three were registered by people from consecutively France, Spain and Belgium.
Now, that's a very international flavour for companies that until recently no one had ever heard of.
Well, it is. And one might wonder why people from all these different countries all decided to register one at exactly the same time. It's like they were somehow connected.
Mm. And are they?
I don't know, Ray, but there are a couple of other clues.
Okay, so what are those?
One of the things you need to include on the form is the general nature of the business. All of them, for these, are either online marketing or e-commerce businesses.
Which makes sense in the time of lockdown.
It does. But, of course, they've signed these forms, which can only be done remotely as travel's not permitted in lockdown. And I can't actually see somebody flying all the way from Mexico just to sign the forms anyway.
So they must have been signed remotely and then posted in.
Well, that's where your critical thinking would lead you to. But apparently all of them were signed at the same time, even though they're from four completely different locations. And here it really does get a bit tricky.
Why is that?
Well, because one of each of the signatures was signed with a biro and the other was with clearly a Sharpie, because the lines are very different widths on the page.
Okay, and that's true for all four of them?
Yes.
And had they come into an office to sign, I suppose it's possible the office would have given one of them a biro and the other one a Sharpie to sign with.
Exactly, and that's good critical thinking again. But they didn't come into the office. They couldn't come into the office because of lockdown.
And it isn't feasible for four couples in different countries all at the same time to decide to sign some registration forms to start an obscure Scottish company to launch their online business all using one biro and one Sharpie.
And that, Ray, is critical thinking.
I mean, it's a great example, Graham. I think we've probably done enough. Shall we leave it there?
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, okay. It's a subject that will probably crop up again. But what's next in the meantime?
Well, do you know, I was thinking we haven't done an episode on financial intelligence units and the role of the Egmont Group. And I know people like our technical episodes, so I thought maybe we'll do that next.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to that.